Welcome. Today we're going to study Likutei Sichas Chelek Yud Beis, Volume 12, the Sicha for Shabbos Hagadol. We won't study it from the text of the actual Sicha. We'll go through it in the format as the Rebbe lays it out. Today we're going to uncover a new layer of understanding into the significance of the Shabbos, and we'll begin with the following source. The Rebbe brings this source, perhaps quotes it more than any other in the entire Likutei Sichas. And it is the words of the Shalach HaKadosh, the famed Rabbi Yeshaya HaLevi Horowitz, the Rav of Prague in the 16th century. He makes the following statement. He says that there is a direct relationship and correlation between the parsha of the week, the Torah portion of the week, and the holiday or the time of the year next to which that parsha is read. Now that seemingly ought not to be the case, because we set up our Torah reading cycle based on starting the Torah on Simchas Torah, finishing it on Simchas Torah, and we lay out the parshas accordingly as we can fit them in between beginning and end. Where the chips fall, let them fall. There seemingly doesn't appear to be necessarily a need to there to be a reason between, the connection between, the fact that we'll read this parsha next to this Yom Tov and this parsha next to this holiday. Says Rabbi Yeshaya HaLevi Horowitz, no. Hashgacha Pratis. It can't be an accident. If on the Shabbat before Pesach, on the Shabbos or Pesach, we're going to be reading the Torah portion of Tzav. That's because there's a direct relationship between Shabbos Hagadol, the celebratory Shabbos that takes place before Pesach, and Parshas Tzav. What that relationship is, we'll get back to that at the end of the Sicha. But this really encapsulates one of the Rebbe's Weltanschauungs, the way he is worldview on life, that there is nothing that happens by accident. That's expressed by the Baal Shem Tov, Hashgacha Pratis, and the Rebbe really weaves this theme throughout all of Likutei Sichas. That if we're reading this parsha next to this holiday, so Mikes next to Chanukah, Nitzav before Rosh Hashanah, there must be a relationship. What is it? Okay. Now let's move on to the actual Shabbos itself. Why indeed is this Shabbos called Shabbos Hagadol, the big Shabbos, Shabbat Hagadol, the big Shabbos? There are many reasons given. One of them is that on this Shabbos it's customary for the rabbi to give a big speech and it feels very long, so people call it the long, big Shabbos, perhaps a little bit boring. And there are many other reasons given, but the primary source and the reason is quoted by Rabbi Shneur Zalman, the Alter Rebbe, in Shulchan Aruch. And this is what he says. He tells us the reason it's called the Shabbos HaGadol, the big Shabbos, is because it celebrates a Nes Gadol, a big miracle. Big Shabbos, big miracle. What was the big miracle? You see, the year that we left Egypt, the year that we left the Mitzrayim, we left on a Thursday, which was the 15th of Nisan. Hashem told us on the 10th of Nisan that we are to take a lamb. Every Jew is to take, every family should take a lamb on the 10th of Nisan, which was a Shabbos. The 10th of Nisan was a Shabbos. Each of us took a lamb. We held it for the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, 4 days. On the 14th, we shechted it, we slaughtered it in the afternoon, slaughtered it, and we ate it that night, and we left in the morning. Thursday morning, we left Mitzrayim. So that means that that year it was a Shabbos, the day that we took on the 10th day of Nisan, when each family in Mitzrayim took a lamb. When that happened, the Egyptians, specifically the Bechorei Mitzrayim, the firstborns, the Egyptian asked the Jewish people, the firstborn, "Gabe, what are you guys doing?" Especially as we know that that lamb was the deity of ancient Egypt. And they said, "Well, Hashem is going to slaughter and kill all firstborn Egyptians. And we are preparing this as a celebration for our exodus of leaving Mitzrayim." Now, when the firstborn heard this, they went to Pharaoh, they went to the elders, they went to their parents, and they said, "You know, there have been 9 makas already. There have been 9 plagues. We got to let them go. We got to send them out. We don't want to die." They said, "Absolutely not." And indeed, on that day, there was a civil war in Egypt between the Bechorei Mitzrayim, the firstborn Egyptians, and the Egyptian army, Pharaoh, his army, the elders. There was a civil war. And David HaMelech in Tehillim tells us, "Lemake Mitzrayim bivchoireihem kili elam chazdei," God's kindness is everlasting, because "Lemake Mitzrayim bivchoireihem," there was bivchoireihem, Egypt and their firstborn had a quarrel, a war between each other. That is the big miracle that took place on the 10th of Nisan. So, if so, why don't we always celebrate the 10th of Nisan? Okay, something tremendous occurred on that day. So, why don't we celebrate? It says, "No. That day, Miriam passed away. A number of years later, Miriam, the sister of Moshe, is going to pass away on the 10th of Nisan. And therefore, when do we commemorate this great big miracle? Not on the calendar date of the month, but on the day of the week that it occurred. We remember every year that this occurred on Shabbos. The Shabbos before we left Egypt, the miracle occurred. So therefore, we celebrate the Shabbos before Pesach. This is what the Alter Rebbe tells us in Shulchan Aruch, in the Code of Jewish Law. This is what he tells us is the primary reason for Shabbos. Okay. Two questions. Number one, what's so great about this miracle? Vis-a-vis the Jewish people, did anything change that the Jewish people somehow gained some freedom because of this great miracle? The Jewish people didn't leave until the Egyptians were actually, there was Makas Becheres, until the firstborn were actually killed, and until Pare himself tells the Jewish people to leave. Vis-a-vis, you're a Jew in Egypt. Did you feel any significant change or difference between, by the fact that there was a civil war that took place? No. So why is it known as a Shabbos HaGadol, a big miracle? There are many, many, many miracles throughout Jewish history. Why is this one singled out as the big miracle? Okay. That's the primary question. Question number two. Technically, you're right. Technically, Miriam's passing usurps the celebratory nature of this day. And we have precedent for that in Jewish law. There's actually an entire Megillah. There's an entire scroll that lists days on which we fast and we don't fast. And even if one of those days that we were to fast were to, for example, be on Rosh Chodesh. Rosh Chodesh is a day of celebration. But if in this scroll called Megillas Tainus, it lists various tragedies that befell the Jewish people, various days that we don't have that today, but in times ago, many, many generations ago, they would fast on many other days commemorating various other tragedies that occurred throughout Jewish history. Let's say one of those tragedies happens to be on Rosh Chodesh. So the tragedy, the tragic nature of that day, the fast, has the ability to usurp and overshadow the joy of Rosh Chodesh. So we find a precedent, technically, halachically, legally, for the fact that Miriam's passing, why don't we celebrate? Remember, the Alter Rebbe told us the reason we don't celebrate this great miracle on the 10th of Nisan is because Miriam's passing, the day of the passing of a righteous, it's a day of fasting, it's a day of reflection, and therefore it's not a day of celebratory meals and festivities, and therefore Miriam's passing would technically overshadow and usurp the celebratory nature of the big miracle. That's true technically. But again, and this is so beautiful, this is why Lakuta Sichas, you gain a different world perspective. Of course that's technically the reason. But if it should so happen that we don't celebrate it on the 10th of Nisan because of that, it's not just a technical glitch. Okay, we can't do it this way, so let's at least celebrate it on Shabbos. And another Sichas Rebbe talks about the relationship with Shabbos specifically. But there must be a reason in the actual content. Why is it such? What about this miracle deserves it not being celebrated when we have Miriam's passing on this day? So, with this in mind, again, to review, number one, what's the relationship between the Torah portion of Tzav and Shabbos HaGadol? Number two, what's so big about this miracle anyway? And number three, why is it that it isn't celebrated because of Miriam's passing? And here we begin the answer. Throughout Jewish history, there indeed have been many miracles. On Pesach night, we say, Shabbachol d'arvader emdim aleinu l'chalatzeinu. Every generation, people have risen up against us to annihilate us. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God has miraculously saved us time and time again. That's true. We're celebrating Pesach. There is something unique, there is something different, and there is something exceptional and extraordinary about this miracle that we don't find with any others. And that is that here, it wasn't a Jewish victory over Egypt. It wasn't a godly victory over Egypt. It wasn't an outside force over Egypt. It was Egypt in and of itself. The Egyptians in and of themselves began to bring a downfall to Egypt. Okay. What's so significant about that? Why is that relevant? Hashem set up this world with nature, teva, a repetitive cycle that keeps on repeating itself over and over and over. We call it a natural phenomenon. there are certain natural truths. What is the definition of a miracle? A miracle means that all of a sudden we recognize that, hey, there's been a change in the nature. Etymologically, the word nes comes from the word banner, which sort of says, hey, here I am. Nature, teva, means that we don't recognize the hand of God. All of a sudden something happens that's different, something happens that we didn't expect. Wow, that's a miracle. Look, the hand of God is clearly visible. Okay. What's different here, what's amazing here is, there was no miracle. So what's the miracle? The miracle is that the nature itself bespoke and revealed the existence of God. In other words, let us explain. The nature of the world is such that you have Egypt and you have the Jewish people. You have good and evil. There's constantly a struggle between Kedusha, between holiness, and Klipa, between the opposite of holiness. That is the nature of the world in which God set it up. Every time there's a miracle throughout history, what happens? Kedusha beats, holiness beats the opposite. That's the story of every Jewish holiday. That's the story of every miracle. That the holy is able to overcome the profane. Okay. That didn't take place over here. The Jewish people didn't even ask the Egyptians to do anything. What happened over here was that the Klipa, that the forces that seek to usually negate holiness in and of themselves, began to fight for the cause of holiness. What part of Egypt? This is the elders, the firstborn of Egypt. These were the Heicha mentioned, the higher society of Egypt. And they now started to rally to the point that they were willing to fight a war to be able to let the Jewish people go. What we have here is, for the very first time, and perhaps for the only time in Jewish history, or in all of human history, a celebration of the nature of the world itself, the klipa, the opposite, the profane, the unholy, vying and rallying and trying to see the success of Kedusha. That is what is unique and different and special about this day. Indeed, it is taking the very opposite of holiness, and in and of itself, on its own, it starts to slowly, slowly, slowly recognize that, hey, the Jewish people, the chosen people of Hashem, they are to be the ones who are to go free so that they can serve Hashem. That is what is gadol, that's what's great, that's what's awesome, that's what's unique and different about Shabbos Haggadah. The ability to take klipa, to take the opposite of holiness, and for it to be able to recognize and understand, perhaps for its selfish sake, yet the Egyptians, the firstborn, weren't doing it for altruistic purposes. That's true. They were doing it not because they loved the Jewish people. They were doing it to save their own skin. We understand that. That's true. But they did it, and as a result of them doing it, they were championing the cause of the Jewish people. That explains why this is a gadol, a nes gadol, a big miracle. Let us now move to Miriam for a second. Miriam's passing is recorded in the Torah portion of Chukas, and it is recorded in close proximity to the laws of the Para Aduma. We know in Halacha, in Judaism, that the worst form of impurity comes from the opposite of life, from a corpse, from a dead body. And when someone has contact in some way, shape, or form with this corpse, with the opposite of life, one descends to the deepest level of tumah, of impurity. How can one leave that state? So the Torah prescribes, para aduma, prescribes a recipe whereby we take a red heifer and we go through the prescribed procedure, and in so doing, we bring forgiveness and we're able to elevate this individual who had descended to the lowest state of impurity, and he's able to resume life as normal. Says Rashi, quoting the Gemara, why is it that Miriam's passing is right next to the laws of the Para Aduma of the Red Heifer? Because just as the Para Aduma has the ability, just as this recipe with the Red Heifer has the ability to take someone who has fallen to the depths and to lift them up to forgive, so the passing of the righteous. When a tzaddik, tzaddikus, when a righteous individual, a man or a woman passes away, They bring kapara, they bring forgiveness for the entire generation. Indeed, sometimes people have acted inappropriately, and it is the passing of one righteous individual that is able to bring forgiveness for an entire generation. Miriam's passing has that capacity to take the low and to elevate. Okay, so. Well, let's move to one other area, and that is, perhaps you're familiar on Rosh Hashanah, if Rosh Hashanah should happen to be on a Shabbos, if Rosh Hashanah is on a Shabbos, we don't blow the shofar. Technically, the reason is because we are afraid that perhaps you might take your shofar, you might carry it, carrying is not allowed on Shabbos, you might go to see maybe your shofar is not kosher, it's kosher, you might carry it, and because we're worried about people carrying shofars on Shabbos, therefore you do not blow the shofar on Rosh Hashanah that comes out on Shabbos. That is the technical, legal reason. Here again, Chassidus comes along and says, okay, technically that is the reason, correct. But what does that mean? How on Rosh Hashanah, the day that we're supposed to have this special mitzvah, how can it be that we're going to just get rid of it? What happens? Because we're afraid someone might forget? And if we are indeed afraid that someone forget, what's going on over here? So this answer is, no, you don't understand. When Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbos, whatever you could accomplish through blowing the shofar happens because it's Shabbos. Rosh Hashanah being on Shabbos accomplishes what a shofar would accomplish. Whatever we need to have, the connection we need to make with Hashem, and the blessing that we need to evoke through our blowing of the shofar on Rosh Hashanah, that happens when Rosh Hashanah is on Shabbos. And dear friends, the same thing is true of Shabbos HaGadol and Miriam. Do you know the reason, dear friends? Why is it? Why don't we celebrate this big miracle on the 10th of Nisan? Because Miriam passed away on that day. That's just not a technical reason. Because on the day of Miriam's passing, we don't need to celebrate this miracle. The miracle of Shabbos HaGadol is accomplished by the 10th of Nisan, by Miriam's passing. Miriam's passing has that ability, the same ability that Shabbos HaGadol. Let's remind ourselves. Shabbos HaGadol celebrates taking from the low, taking the firstborn Egyptians, the low, the klipa, and taking them and having them championing a cause of Kedusha, of holiness. What does Miriam's passing do? Miriam's passing takes somebody who has fallen to the depths and has the ability to raise them back up. So therefore, we don't need to celebrate this miracle on the day of Miriam's passing. That happens automatically. You see, it's so beautiful. It's not just a technical glitch in the system. It actually resonates. And Miriam's passing is indeed the Shabbos HaGadol. So what's the relationship to Parshas Tzav? How does this all connect together? What does Parshas Tzav discuss? Parshas Tzav, the Torah portion we're about to read this Shabbos, talks about the Shivas Yimei HaMiluim. That's right, from the 23rd day of Adar, we know the Jewish people started building the Mishkan, they started assembling it on Yom Kippur, the day after Yom Kippur, and they collected, they built it, it was ready a few months later on Kislev, but God says, we're going to save a special day. There's going to be a day on which we're going to inaugurate and dedicate, and that's going to be on the first day of Nisan. We're going to dedicate the Mishkan on that day. But I want you to prepare for 7 days. I want the first day of Nisan to be day number 8. So we're going to have 7 days of completion, of reaching the climax, and then we can open the doors. Right before you have the cutting of the ribbon ceremony, you want to make sure that all the paint is in order, that everything is perfectly organized. Once it's reached its maximum, it's reached the climax, now we're ready for the divine presence to rest in this home. And that will take place on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first day of Nisan, day number 8. But this week's Torah portion describes the 7 days, the Shivas Yemei HaMiluim. And the purpose, what is the function of these 7 days? The function of these 7 days, seven being the totality of all of creation, all of nature, is to infuse within nature, to have it reach its perfection. Just as we said before, that nature usually hides the existence of God. Nature usually tells us, where's God? We need a miracle to sort of come in and say, Superman, here we go, God is here. Nature doesn't bespeak its creator.
What was the miracle of Shabbos HaGadol? That nature now began to express, that the Egyptian itself began to express godliness, holiness. Well, guess what this Torah portion is entirely about? What is the entire Torah portion of Tzav about? About taking these 7 days, the nature, and filling it, maximizing it so that it reaches its ultimate climax and potential. Ultimately, to the sense, as we're going to have in the Messianic era in Mashiach's times, that today we have a sun and a moon. In other words, we have the complete light of the sun and the incomplete light of the moon, sort of that waxes and wanes, it goes back and forth, that just receives its light from the sun. And we are told that the ultimate maximum, ultimately, nature will reach its climax. It will, when will it become malay? When will it become filled? When even the moon is as strong as the light of the sun. That reflects spiritually the idea of the fulfillment of godliness, of holiness within nature. You actually see this in the name of the Torah portion itself. The Torah portion is called Tzav. Tzav means to command. And Tzav, in Talmudic literature, has two opposite meanings. We know that Adam was given 6 commandments, and the 7th commandment came with Noah. We have the 7 Noahide laws. Well, 6 of those Adam got, not to murder, not to steal, not to commit idolatry, etc., etc. And the 7th, not to eat living creatures, Noah got, because Adam couldn't eat any animals, so it really didn't apply in his days. He only ate vegetation. So the Talmud tells us, how do we know, where in the Torah do we see that Adam got these 6 mitzvahs? And it goes through different words. And the Torah says the word vayitzav, and God commanded him, that refers to God commanding Adam not to serve idols, not to worship idols. The word tzav refers to worshiping idols. When the Jewish people sin in the golden calf, God says they've strayed away from everything I've commanded them. Tzav. Everything I've commanded them, meaning not to serve idols. So the word tzav reflects idolatry. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, the word tzav, to command, the opening sentence of this week's Torah portion, we are told that God tells those who have an extra fervor, who have an extra zest for Judaism, and he wants to give them extra commandments because he sees their dedication, he sees who they are, and they're willing to run and to do a mitzvah, even at the cost of their own well-being, at their own financial expense. God says, tzav, go to it, guys. Command, go to it. In other words, tzav is said to a person who's filled with enthusiasm and with commitment to God. So the name of the Torah portion itself in Jewish literature expresses these two opposite truths. Yes, the nature of the world is such that generally people worship themselves, they are self-absorbed. Tzav, they're worshiping idols. But tzav has the ability to take that, to transform it, so that indeed it becomes tzav, running to serve the will of Hashem. That is what Shabbos HaGadol is all about. That the firstborn Egyptians themselves, those who were worshiping idols, now began to run to help the Jewish people go free. It's called Hishapcha Chashecha L'Nahira, taking the darkness. And the darkness itself, in and of itself, that darkness now wants light. Not because it's overpowered by something else, not because there's some extraordinary force, not because there's a miracle that comes and says, ta-da! No. The nature itself is, we reveal that the nature itself is indeed the work of God. That the Egyptian himself essentially is a creation of God that wants godliness and holiness and the Jewish people to flourish in life. Good Shabbos, everybody. May the Shabbos HaGadol truly be, we witness Nes Gadol, the ultimate great miracle, the coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu.